This podcast is brought to you by Julius Meinl Coffee. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Bucianas, no call! Score!
Salamini for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket! Trimboli, what vision!
Marth blasts.
Yes! It's it!
Miljevic.
Beautiful ball!
Here's Bozanic.
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR Football Nation Radio.
That make you weep.
I quite enjoyed that.
I was just going to say, when I first started...
I enjoyed that.
Yes. When I first started in radio, I had to change my name.
Back in the 50s?
Yes. And the only reason at the time was because they thought I sounded too ethnic. So I said to them, what name should I have? And they said, George White, George Brown, any colour, George is fine.
Mm.
So I said to them, so Danikian doesn't work. They said, correct. Run another name. So I took one letter out of my name and made it Donican. And I had the whole Irish community thinking I was a member of the O'Donicans.
Ah.
But we're going Scottish tonight because on the Pioneers, you've cranked up every inventory list and come up with a player,
yes,
a referee,
yes,
and a member of the police force,
yes,
and anything else that he's bringing with him other than a whistle.
Great guy,
great guy, a comedian, storyteller, and a guy who's been creating havoc on Facebook this week for me. I've had about 4 million people ringing up saying, have you got Ronnie Sinclair on?
4 million. I've told you a million times not to exaggerate.
Okay. All right. Ron Sinclair, how is it that you managed to sneak past the advance guard and get in here, and you're still in uniform, I notice. Very impressive.
Well, only the Victoria Police Soccer Club uniform. I'm not tooled up.
Well, this
there was
is
a
right.
lot of people actually said, you know, if you're going to go and see the two Georges, you better tool up.
I thought you might bring the bagpipes in.
Yeah, well, as I said, I rode the push bike to work.
That makes it awkward.
I've played the bagpipes skiing down Mount Buller, but I think riding a push bike might be a little beyond me.
Wow.
Something to work on.
Yeah.
In the future.
Yeah. I'll take it on board.
Ron Sinclair, your football story has so many different chapters, we don't know where to start. I mean, George Kotsanis normally reaches in and goes, take us way back.
We're going to do that. We're going to alter this. Yes.
Oh,
we do have
to alter the schedule and the template.
I'm going to send the schedule to next week.
Wow.
Before we go to our general question, which we start with, I want to hear about the famous hat-trick at Western Suburbs, because I don't want this hour to pass without the listeners hearing about this famous hat-trick at Western Suburbs.
Is it going to take that long, is it?
It might do.
George, I've got news for you. There is no chance in the wide world of sport that this hour would go past without me talking about the hat-trick against Western Suburbs in the Premier League.
Yes, in the Premier League, of course.
In the Premier League.
All right, goal one.
Goal one, up for a... So I played the vast majority of my football career as a centre-half. So I get over the halfway line and I start to get a nosebleed. Mm-hmm. But I used to go up for the corners. So gone up for the first corner and a header at the back post. In it goes.
Nice one.
20 minutes later, went up for another corner. The goalkeeper, and this takes some of the glory away, the goalkeeper has fumbled the corner, dropped the ball right at my feet, and it's gone in off my shin pad. And the game's gone on. We're winning 3-0 with about 2 minutes left to go, and we got a penalty. And Dave Stack used to take our penalties and used to take them very, very well and very successfully. I've run the entire length of the field.
Sprinted, I'm told.
Well, for me, Marcel Marceau running against the wind. But no, I didn't say I want to take it. I ripped the ball out of Stacky's hand. There was no discussion whatsoever.
Disgusting.
I put it down there.
I cannot believe that you did a Luis Suarez or a Neymar to your fellow colleagues there and ripped it out of their hands and decided you were going to make it three goals in the game. That's That's cruel. Well, I didn't think you had it in you, actually.
It is cruel, George, but life is cruel. And
you mean life's not fair. You don't always get what you deserve, is that right?
That's right. Yes. But on this occasion, you deserve. I did.
All right, so we're going to cut that up and it'll have its own little short podcast, that hat trick story, and we'll be able to send it worldwide to everyone who asks in the future, and there'll be that many that do.
Well, I can actually, I've actually got a tabletop reenactment that I could bring in on another occasion. The PowerPoint presentation goes a little longer than the 1 hour.
So can you do it on Subudio for us or something?
I've got all that down pat. But, getting it into 1 hour is probably a little beyond us.
Ron Sinclair, you were born in Falkirk. That's not in Australia. So how did you get here?
We came out.
Oh, it's a wee
the old, well, my family, my mum, dad and myself came out as the $10 Poms. Uh-huh. And landed in Fremantle, Western Australia, on my third birthday, so 23 years ago.
Was the good doctor blowing at that time?
23 years ago. George.
You look like you doubt.
Was the good doctor blowing?
The Fremantle doctor, the Fremantle? Every single day. Never missed a day.
So how long did you stay in Fremantle?
We stayed in Perth for 7 years and then went and lived in Papua New Guinea.
What? The Highlands?
Lay for 10 months and then Moresby for a bit over 3 years.
What was that all about? Why did you go to Papua New Guinea?
Dad was a sparky. He worked as an electrician.
He
got a job with Nilex Cables and they gave him the opportunity to go up there as a Southeast Asian representative.
So what was it like? What was life like in Papua New Guinea for a young Scottish boy just becoming an Australian?
Oh, it's fantastic. It was like living in Boy's Own Annual. You know, in those days, it was a very safe place, and you would finish school, and the rule was when the sun set, you came home, and in between the end of school and sunsetting, we would ride our bikes literally to the edge of the jungle and go exploring there, and there'd be hunting and fishing, and it was a great place.
Well, it's also Australia's colony. Australia was in control, was responsible for the goodwill and also the growth of Papua New Guinea until it became independent.
Yeah, well, we were there until just after independence.
And
it got a little bit wild and woolly then. And
some of the rascals stepped up?
Some of the rascals got very, very rascally. Okay. And Mum just announced that's it, we're going.
But hang on, you did get a chance to play for the Pirates, though, didn't you, while you were in Papua?
That was
the Port Moresby Pirates.
My very first team was the Port Moresby Pirates.
Tell us about them.
Oh, look, it was we played on a hockey field. So this was at, I think, under 14 level.
Get out.
So we played on the hockey field. You had to wear fairly decent runners or boots because the bindies, the prickles on the ground were just everywhere. You did not slide tackle.
No, I can imagine.
Yeah, but it was great fun, you know. It's same as playing as a kid anywhere, I suppose. You just run around kicking the ball with your mates and having a fantastic time, and that's what football did. It probably brought into me a lot of the love I have of engaging with people through football, because we would be playing teams that had Caucasian backgrounds. We'd be playing teams that were mainly made up of locals.
Yeah, the indigenous.
And, and in our team there was both Caucasians and locals playing along, and you know, it's football. Everyone's the same.
Fantastic stuff.
Which leads us to your very first football memory. Do you can you recall?
Can I remember my first memory, George? You've been doing this long. My first memory as a footballer was in the backyard.
Thought it might be the whistle
in Perth, playing with my dad, just running around. We've actually got a little bit of what is now video, but obviously in those days,
Super 8. Yeah.
Get out.
And we'd...
Have you still got it?
Yeah, still got that. Still got that as Super 8 and on video.
Dad love his footy?
Yeah. Dad played as a youth, but then turned to refereeing, so he turned to the dark side.
Wow.
And he refereed in Scotland, West Australia, and frighteningly in Papua New Guinea.
My God. So you were contaminated early.
Yeah, I didn't have any chance. You know. I was never, ever going to grow up as a tennis player.
So what did you learn about your father's exploits in Papua, and how dangerous was it refereeing in New Guinea?
It was the Wild West.
Wow.
Yeah, and I learned a lot about it because I went to just about every game that he refereed. And
how
and
brave
that,
was he?
Yeah, pretty brave. Well, there's a fine line, brave, stupid. No, no. Yeah, we went to game. We left games and literally under a hail of spears and arrows on occasions. Oh. Dad refereed a game in the Germanian club that really turned upside down, and we left in what I always termed at school as a tank because it made the story sound better. But we left that game in an armoured personnel carrier.
Get out of here.
Yeah, great story. When you get into school the next day, what did you do over the weekend, Johnny? I went fishing. What did you do on the weekend, Johnny? I went for a bike ride. What did you do on the weekend, Ron? I went to a football game and we left in a tank.
Surprisingly, actually, the Federation's here haven't invested in some tanks to help referees get home from games on their particular occasions.
Listen, there have been enough volleys and torrents of abuse that referees have had to endure. I couldn't imagine inciting them even more by bringing in personal carrier. That would just lift the intensity of the screaming to new heights.
I have never, ever been foolish enough to say that I'm a great referee. I think my enjoyment of football brings something to refereeing. But something that people often say is, Ronnie, you always look calm. Doesn't matter what people are doing. Doesn't matter what people are saying. You always look like you're enjoying it. You never look like you're worried about the crowd. And I say that. When you've left a football game under a torrent of arrows or where you needed an armoured personnel carrier to leave a game, you know, 30 or 40 verbalising people on the sideline, it just doesn't cut it.
We're talking to Ron Sinclair, a member of the Victoria Police Force, but in his time, a player, a referee, and a great storyteller. Were you like Dennis Voutsinas? In other words, that you know, he was chatty. He used to like to talk to the players. When you're refereeing, do you basically get around and come on, Billy? I saw what you did. Just don't do that again, otherwise you'll be seeing a yellow card.
Yeah. I think I'm really verbal on the football field. And that's probably a really polite way to say it.
Wow.
You'll get inevitably, as you all know, you'll get a player turn around and say something less than complimentary about your latest decision. And George, I think, had a bit of a reputation.
Ooh,
you're
short
both George.
Fuse.
Yeah,
oh.
had a bit of a short fuse as far as that goes. I tend to give back as well as I get.
Your first football job in Australia. Can you remember it?
My first football job.
Yep.
My actual.
You had a responsibility and a commitment, and you did it. Yep.
Look, the first time
on training nights, you had to go out and you make sure you bought Norrie Pail.
Norrie
paid his dinner, was it?
Well, it was the only way I got selected for the team.
we were
playing at Knox and I'd moved from Ferntree Gully, which was, I don't know, state two, I think, at the time, up to Knox, which was in the state league, which is now the Premier League, NPL. And I was not the most skillful of players. And one of the ways to get on the team sheet was to buy Norrie a nice plate of bangers and mash.
How many meals did Norrie have on a Thursday night?
Plenty.
Well, I can tell you, he sort of looked like he'd had one or two too many, some of the way his pace dropped off. I had to start buying him salads.
That's just so precious. I love it. What have you got for him next, G2?
Before you got there, you played some junior football at the old Ferntree Gully. Was that your first step into junior football when you arrived from Port Moresby?
Yeah, that was the first one. I lived in Mountain Gate and played for Ferntree Gully for a number of years.
What are the memories of playing junior football there?
Grass in Australia.
Yeah, that was the first thing.
There wouldn't have been too much grass in Papua New Guinea, would there?
No. Quite often you were just playing on clay.
Bare earth, yeah.
Clay.
So what did you make of the green stuff on the ground as a youngster?
Well, the first thing I did was try and eat it. And then, of course, I tried to smoke it.
Let's not go there.
But no, it's part of the statute of limitations.
There you okay, go.
Beautiful. Yeah, we've got that. Always think about that.
Yeah, I was thinking Commander might be listening.
Yeah. No.
Or we'll send him a podcast, what do you reckon?
No, Ferntregully was a great little club, very, very Dutch orientated, and a lot of Dutchies in that. And, you know, some of them still involved in football now. Cortu is one of the players that I played with, and he's still heavily involved with Knox City.
Did he understand anything you were saying, and did you understand anything he was saying?
No, he was pretty good with me, but my grandmother came out from Scotland, had a really broad accent, and used to come to a lot of the games.
Fabulous.
And her and Cor used to have conversations for 10, 15 minutes at a time, and neither one knew what either was saying.
But both were very polite, obviously.
Oh, seriously polite.
Yeah. Body language does a great thing. What a body language.
That's so pretty. I love it. That's the reality. That's what happens in life.
Okay, because of your contrasting playing, refereeing, and a lot of the charity work to do, the show's going to jump a bit.
Yeah, and you played still, for a number of clubs.
Yeah,
so
you're still playing.
We'll get on that.
Yeah,
you're
still playing for the police team, and also playing for the Doncaster Legends over 55s team. I'm trying to actually get us to assume the nickname the Vampires because we hate crosses.
In all shapes and forms, forward line, defensive line and goalkeeper, is that
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Is that because you don't like heading the ball?
Well, I'm pretty keen on it, but I used to be able to jump. Now for me to head the ball, somebody has to hit me on the head with it.
Oh, dear. Oh, that's seriously scary stuff.
Okay, so you did mention the most important part there, Victoria Police, that soccer club which you've been a part of since...
1995. Joined them when the World Police and Fire Games were played in Melbourne.
Okay, so the club is over 70 years old as such, and in its early form did participate in the leagues as a normal football club does. And quick shout-out to Vince Mano. If anyone knows or has got any historic articles...
Memorabilia
or any details about the Victoria Police Club, please get in touch and we'll pass that on to Vince, who's doing some work on that field at the moment. But you came into it when they were now obviously a non-league club and just a charity-type situation. Take us through, like you said, 1995, the World Fire and Police Games.
Yeah, well, the World Police and Fire Games played every second year all around the world. Really, really competitive games. In 1995, the Dutch team won it, and they had three members of their team who had played in the previous World Cup.
Oh, God.
They qualified because they were doing a form of national service in Holland.
Of course
they
were.
Their form of national service in the police force, so they were eligible to play in the World Police and Fire Games.
Has the Australian police force been anywhere near as creative as the Dutch?
No way. We get butchers and bakers and candlestick makers. We don't get international footballers.
What I would have done... I would have gone and grabbed someone like a Gary Ablett, and people would have said, he can't play soccer. It doesn't matter. He would have lined up against the Dutch and taken them out.
I actually refereed Gary Ablett just after he finished his AFL career. He actually took up with one of the Geelong Corio. Teams, Corio.
Oh,
I think it was,
wow.
And
tell
played
us about
with Corio. He played up front, and he was not bad.
He was good.
That's what I've heard.
He was not bad. He used to score, well, in the game that I refereed, he scored two goals, both
with
his head.
Did you say anything to him at any stage throughout the game, or just let him run?
Look, he was just off an AFL career, and his arms were bigger than my legs. Yeah. I kept my mouth pretty much shut.
Yeah. 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 As you would.
But I might have mentioned to him at the end of the game, because he was actually bragging a little bit. I might have mentioned to him, mate, you scored two goals. This is State One. I've scored three goals against Western Suburbs in the Premier League.
So,
you know,
so
it reared its little head, as it does, surprisingly.
All right, so tell us, keep going on about the police, 1995.
Yeah, so we played in the games. We got into the quarterfinals and were knocked out in the quarterfinals by, again, an excellent and extraordinarily athletic South African team. And then it just went on from there.
Did they have any Springboks playing?
They were springing all over the place, these lads. I couldn't believe it. They were doing warm-ups at half-time that would have killed me.
Warm-ups at half-time.
Yeah, so... Yep. I continued on with the police team and continue on now. Most of the stuff that we do is charity and community-based. We still participate in World Police and Fire Games and other competitions. We've got the Australian Police Championships in Australia in late October, early November. They're in Melbourne. We're going to Chengdu in China for the World Police and Fire Games, the first time the World Police and Fire Games have been held in Asia.
Are you doing any work in between?
Yeah, look, every now and then. I dropped in to work a couple of weeks ago, said hello. That was great. It was good to catch up with everyone there.
Speaking of catching up, David James on Facebook goes, you obviously haven't played in a game that Ron refereed.
Yeah, I think somebody made a complimentary Facebook entry about me there. And
George Bielewski said champion person.
Yeah, champion person. And then the Shannon, who I've shared a room with on some of our trips, the Shannon pipes up, you obviously haven't seen him referee. I mean, that hurts my feelings.
Gordon Kirkwood, great guy. Always a pleasure to meet him Ron Sinclair. Nick Van Egmont, they don't get better than this guy. Should be a lot of fun. He's been there and a true champion. Gee. Ulysses Kokinos, who we all know, he says, Ron Sinclair, true champion, true gentleman.
So, well, if anyone's going to know, it's Ulysses.
Juan Carlos Loyola, OAM. Not many people like you, Ron Sinclair, champion for the community, real gentleman. And on behalf of all the people with special needs, we give you a huge thank you and our unconditional support. It's been an absolute pleasure. What a wonderful testimonial.
They are. They're lovely. And you know what? Every one of those that you read out, they all have something in common.
Well, Gary Cole says Ronaldo is a champion.
Yeah.
Who's he talking
and more,
about there?
More than anyone else. They all have something in common. They all drink heavily.
No. This tells us. Look, I've got a list here and it goes on. Robert Nelson. I've got Dennis Voutsinas, you know, good referee, good friend, a champion man. I'll be listening. So they're out there. They've locked up and lined up to listen to some of the deeds and some of the stories that Ron Sinclair is about to release between now and 8 o'clock on FNR's
still going with
the Pioneers.
We want to know the work that the police force and the VicPol Police Soccer Club get involved with specifically. So some of the charity days and organisations, I want you to go into some detail.
Oh, well, the biggest charity thing that we do is the Good Friday Appeal. So that's coming up. Get down to Jeff's Shed on Good Friday. So every year for the last 13 years, we've run a bit of a sausage sizzle at the Good Friday Appeal. The last couple of years, we've raised more than $15,000 every year. Just
fantastic.
That's a lot of snags. That's basically a cow with the legs cut off.
So I was going to say quality snags?
Oh, yeah, absolutely quality. We get them from a little Greek butcher in Huntington, Olympic Meats.
And what about the bread, the rolls?
Just bread. And you know what? We still put the onions on top of the snags. I don't care what Bunnings says. We still put the onions on top.
I'm with you. That's how it should be.
Yeah. So we've been doing that for the last 13 years, and that's great fun. The Royal Children's Hospital Good Friday Appeal, as everyone knows, is just a fantastic thing. We always get somebody every year always comes up and says, it's Good Friday. You shouldn't be selling sausages.
Oh, dear.
But that's all right. That's all right. We've got that covered. We always say to them, that's all right. They're fish sausages. And they buy three or four.
There you go.
Walk away.
It's very simple stuff.
Yeah. You've just got to be thinking one step ahead. So that's it. We are involved with a couple of other charities, most of the charities involving children, a couple of orphanages, an organisation called Hopeful Hearts in China that facilitates life-saving heart operations for kids, and an organisation called Dreams Come True, which facilitates sporting opportunities for underprivileged kids. And they're fantastic. You know, you talk about putting your life into perspective. When you go to an orphanage in Vietnam and you make what for us is a small donation, and they say that's enough to run one of our houses for an entire year.
Ouch.
You know, this is a house where one carer and 20 orphans, and it runs on $20 Australian a week.
We don't realise just
an opportunity to make a difference.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we don't readily understand, the fabulous commitment and support that the police force provides. I keep reminding people as often as we can that at the first sign of trouble, the police force are the first responders, and they're always running towards the danger, not running away from it. So we need to pay a bit more respect than we do, and it's always fabulous to see them get involved in charity events and really commit. The band is a fabulous one, the Police band. They do some fabulous work, and there's some seriously talented musos.
Oh, there is. I was actually in the Police Pipe Band in the 1980s. I didn't score a hat trick for them. But,
the Pipe Band.
Yeah, the Pipe Band. So we were...
How many bands does the police force, the Victoria Police Force, have?
No, we just have the one now. There used to be the Pipe Band.
We've rationed.
The military band, which had sort of the show band attached. Uh-huh. But you know, these are difficult times financially, and you've got to rationalise. And we did. As the organisation, they cut out all the bands, but there was a fair bit of discontent with that, and after a fairly short period of time, they brought back the Pipe Band.
Yeah.
And the Pipe Band has some seriously talented musicians in it.
I've done a number of events over the years, had the good fortune to host some of them, and you sit there and you watch the faces of the people who have turned up to participate, and they love the music and they love the talent, so it's just fab.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. Well done. Back to George's question, which is you got around to a number of clubs. When did you decide that playing was not your caper and refereeing was really what you should do?
It was always the plan. It was It was always the plan. I always said, as I said, Dad was a referee in all sorts of really exciting
places,
iterations, and it was always my plan when I couldn't play at a reasonable level to turn to refereeing. And literally I stopped playing at Knox City in 1995. I turned 35.
Yep.
It was fairly clear that as a 36-year-old I wasn't going to get a run
State
League. And I, during the off season, I did the referees course and then started refereeing in 1996.
Fantastic stuff. We're going to take a short break. This is the Pioneers. Ron Sinclair is our guest, storyteller extraordinaire, but more importantly, a referee with a whistle, and he might even blow that whistle. That whistle that you've got in the studio with you belongs to...
This was my dad's whistle. This is a whistle that travelled with him to Scotland, to West Australia, and to Papua New Guinea. So every time I referee a game of note, it doesn't have to be a big game, it might be a little unusual, I kick off the game with Dad's whistle, I say his name, I give it a bit of a kiss, put it in my pocket.
Fantastic.
And then go on with the
normal
one.
What was Dad's name?
William Allen Sinclair. Allen.
Billy Boy. We'll talk about Billy Boy when we come back.
Butsianis, no call! Score!
Salamini for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket! Trimboli, what vision!
Marth blasts.
Yes! Heads it!
Miljevic.
Beautiful ball!
Here's Bozanic.
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back. Thursday night, you're on the Pioneers at Football Nation Radio, G1 and G2, and our special guest, Ron Sinclair. And a little bit of extra music, no more bagpipes for now. We may go back to
I was going to sing along.
Yeah, you can sing along.
Just don't blow the whistle, please.
Not long ago, Jimmy O'Reilly was in here singing, so wouldn't be the first time, the last time a Scotsman has. So.
Well, one of the reasons I play the bagpipes is because when it comes to singing, I couldn't hold a tune if it had a handle on it. And you can't play the bagpipes and sing, so it was pretty safe.
But going forward, the Pioneers, we could get a band together. You could play the bagpipes, Jimmy could sing, because he has recorded a CD, actually. People don't know that, but it's a fact, he's recorded a CD.
The station commander can just about order whatever he likes at FNR these days.
Yes, he can do what he likes. And what we will do is just go back to some of the extra special work that the VicPol are doing, the Victorian Police Soccer Club, especially the two that I want to discuss, or I want you to elaborate on, is the Doveton Special School and the Tony Clark Memorial Day.
Ah.
Please.
The two most important games in our fairly packed calendar. So the Doveton Special Soccer School, we've been playing them for the last 15 years. So we've played them 14 times and we have not won a game yet.
Gee.
They always pip us. They're always high-scoring games. They're around about 14-13 or 16-14.
When's that coming up? Sorry,
we're talking soccer?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. 14th of April this year, we'll be playing in Box Hill.
Yep.
So that's always a thrilling game. They're a fantastic group of people. It's not just kids. There's a little bit of a misnomer there. There's adults playing for that game, playing in that game. They've obviously have some intellectual disabilities that they carry around, but to different degrees.
And we've got a couple of guys at FNR who happily would come in and assist your goalkeepers for those special games.
That'd be
Sirianis and Nick DiBato.
We could get some guest players.
A couple of young guys.
We do have guest players. My daughter Lauren, she's a bit of a football nut. She's
fantastic.
Played against them. My daughter Courtney, who is not a football nut and would rather eat mud, she's come along and played again in the Dufton special soccer call games. But yeah, they're fantastic. Such a wonderful group of people, and it just goes to show what football can do. You know, they're dealing with so many challenges in their lives, but for 90 minutes there, they are absolute champions, and they always beat the Victoria Police Soccer Club. They always let us know they are not quiet winners, I've got to tell you. They get stuck into something chronic.
Bragging rights.
Yeah, bragging rights over the top. But just so many great memories. One of my strongest memories is a game we played at Port Melbourne against Dufton Special Soccer School, and one of their players was quite a good little footballer, and the game was precariously balanced right towards the end, about 14 all or something like that. And we had Rick Jansen in goals, and Rick is a good keeper. He played at the highest level in Victoria, and he's still a good keeper, and he still was then. And this young lad has just hit a peach from outside the box. He couldn't have hit it better. And it sailed in the top corner. Rick's down there. He's going, oh, yeah, no, not getting that. And that was a winning goal. The referees blowing the whistle for the end of the game. They won 15-14. And this kid's gone running over to his parents on the side of the road, on the side of the pitch. And his mum was in tears, and his dad was standing about 20 feet tall with pride, and he was in tears. And he's just gone and given his mum a great big hug, and his dad's just standing there so proud of his son. And all 20 of their players have piled on top of him. And all of our, you know, we've got hardened detectives and members who have been in the police force for years and years and years. And we're all standing there, and I look around our team, and there was tears being shed, just tears of joy.
Yes.
To see that joy in this kid's and see what it meant to his family and the pride that they had. So I've got no doubt 14th of February in Box Hill, there'll be similar stories. This year, this is our year. I can feel it in our water.
Oh, do you reckon you can turn the tide?
We're going to get up over the top of this one. Big time. This is our year. 15 is the charm.
Well, maybe if FNR can get out and do a live broadcast.
Do you need a defender or two? Because I reckon I'll put up a couple of extra special players there.
Well, I don't know if you were listening, George, but 15 goals against, what do you think?
Yeah, I reckon you need some defence.
Yeah, there you go.
Georgina Stewart, are you available? No, she said no.
Well, all right, and another big, big day on the Victorian Police soccer calendar, and even the football calendar is the Tony Clark Memorial Day.
Yep. Special one.
Explain why first, just for those who aren't aware.
So Tony was a playing member of the Victoria Police Soccer Club. He played in the 1995 World Police and Fire Games with us. And sadly, he was murdered with his own firearm when he was on a one-up patrol. And so in honour of Tony's memory, every year we play a team of ex-Australian international players. So the Socceroos versus the Copperoos.
Wow.
And it started off just as a fairly low-key event at Knox City. Yeah. Tony worked out of Knox. So they were gracious enough to host us there for a number of years, and then it moved along to a couple of different grounds. But now we've found our home at Lakeside, and the last 4 years have been played at Lakeside Stadium as the current race.
Great venue.
It is. It's fantastic.
Especially with the last $60 million that was spent on it to bring it up to make it a very special boutique facility in the heart of Melbourne at Albert Park. It's just magical.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And the pitch is super, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really good. And all of our hosts have been absolutely wonderful, Knox. And we played at Amy Park, and we played at Heidelberg. And they have all been wonderful. But I think we, without in any way, denigrating what other clubs have done for us. We've found our home at South Melbourne for this particular game. They're great hosts. The teams that they play against always honour the game. So, you know, we play against the Socceroos. We've won a couple. They've won most of them, but we have won a couple. And that's played as a curtain raiser before an NPL game. We get all of Tony's family along, Tina and Connor, his son, John, his father, and his wider family. Great. And we just make sure that they know that we're still thinking about them and that we're still thinking about Tony.
Yeah.
And we're keeping Tony's sacrifice out there so people never forget what he's done and what other police members have done for the people of Victoria.
Correct. Speaking of memorable people, I've met his father at Amy Park.
John, yeah.
Yeah, Jono. And he really, you can see just what that occasion means to him. It's a very special occasion. And the efforts of all the players who get involved is really appreciated. So it's fantastic.
The quality of play is good.
It
is fantastic. And Tony was such a football man. You know, he was, as I said, a player for us, a mad Liverpool supporter, which we forgive him.
I was almost going to say almost perfect, but Liverpool, really, what was he thinking?
Well, I don't know what he was thinking.
Easily led.
In some of those days in the 90s when Liverpool were winning everything, I'd get phone calls at 3 in the morning from him.
All these front runners, the same thing, aren't they? They sit down quietly and
It is a special day, and any event they can have Jimmy Rooney continually turning up and wearing the green and gold is a great event as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he's a superstar.
Jimmy has not missed a Tony Clark game and still gets out there and plays. He's into his 70s and he still plays. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, he broke one of our players' hearts.
Nutmegging him
twice in 5 minutes. He's put...
he did a Katsanis, didn't he?
Done it deliberately. And the second one, he's actually called. He's actually got the ball. He's dropped the shoulder. He's called out nutmeg and then put it straight between Michael Putson's legs.
Well, there lies the difference between Katsanis. He'd tell anybody nothing. Yeah. He's a stealth bomber.
No, I'll call it too, but I'm not going into the category with Jimmy Rooney. Jimmy Rooney is in his own category. Oh. He's even above Luis Suarez when it comes to numbers.
Hallelujah.
Hey, don't worry about Jimmy Rooney.
By the way, talking about memorable characters, a young guy, Brazilian guy, he's made quite an impression on you.
I actually got to meet Pelé technically on 3 occasions.
Technically. Oh, please explain.
So Pelé was out in the late 80s to Australia doing a book signing.
And you assigned yourself to that book signing, did you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did. So I was a senior Connie then. I was just a little pup.
So what did you buy dinner for someone, did you?
No, I actually had a court case in the city and I knew Pelé was doing his book signing. So I've gone into the court case. It was supposed to run for a couple of days, but the defence has given it up at lunchtime.
Sensational.
And changed their plea. So I've gone down to Swanson Street, aided Collins
aided,
Books.
Hang on, aided and abetted by Ron Sinclair. They changed the plea.
I might have slipped him a 50. 50 cents, that is.
That's it, I was going to say.
Scotsman.
There you go.
So you went down to Collins Street.
I've gone down there and it was just packed. You couldn't get near the place. And this was in Swanson Street.
Sorry, this is Collins in Swanson
Collins
Street.
That's right, in Swanson Street. So this is when cars were in Swanson Street. And
you would
couldn't
have been
get
in
near
uniform.
The place.
You would
so
have been
I was in
uniform,
just having come from court, and I was just going to turn around and leave because I thought I'm never going to get close. And the managers come running out, see me in uniform, and say, "Oh, thank goodness you're here! Come on around the back. I'll put you around the back." And he through the back door, standing right beside Pelé as his little personal security guard.
Yeah.
And that day sort of flew by because it was really shambolic and there was all these people. I had to do a little diversion. They snuck Pelé out the back and that was gone. And I thought,
Mission accomplished.
That's fantastic. You're close to the great man. And I was getting ready to leave and somebody's come up to me afterwards, one of his minders, and said, "Oh, that was really good. Thank you. Are you going to be looking after Pelé tomorrow?" And I've said, "Yes." As a matter of fact, damn. Just remind me when and where.
And again.
And they said, oh, it's at Myers at 10 o'clock tomorrow. So I've gone, yeah, I'll be there. I'll see you there. So I've gone back to Venture Gully Police Station where I was working. They said, how did court go?
I said,
it was pretty tough. We're going to go back tomorrow.
White light.
That's precious.
A little white. So I've gone in there, and this time Myers, as you would expect, they were really well organised, and they had a little dais and a stage. He was sitting up there, and there was this snaking queue going all around the place. And right down, and a seat for his minder right beside him. And I spent 2 or 3 hours just sitting beside him. And one of the things I remember is, you know, you have this vision sometimes of great people, and you meet them in the flesh, and this has happened to me, and they turn out to be less than. But he was just an absolute gentleman, and he would sign everything. The organizer said, no, he'll only sign his book. He would sign his shirts and balls and arms and everything. And I remember seeing this lady, middle-aged lady in the crowd, and she was just coming towards him in the queue, and she had nothing in her hands. And I thought, you know, what's going on? And she got up to Pelé, and she had nothing. And he said, oh, you know, thank you for being so patient. Is there something you'd like me to sign? And she took out of her pocket a St. Christopher's medal.
Oh, wow.
And she said, I'd like you to have this. And he said, oh, that's very nice. I'm Catholic, you know. And she said, yeah, well, this belonged to my son, and he was a great admirer of yours, and he was killed in a car accident.
No, dear.
So I would like you to have it. And Pelé, you talk about grown men again, shedding tears. Pelé got down off the dais, and he took the St. Christopher medal, and he kissed it.
Yeah.
And he put it around the lady's neck, and he kissed her on both cheeks. And how he gorgeous. Said, I want you to keep this.
To remember
you have
something.
Given me something I will never forget.
Yeah. How beautiful.
And again, you know, all these hard men queuing up to get his, and there was tears. It was just wonderful.
Speaking of hard men, I bet you would have seen just about everybody you played that day.
Yeah, everyone I've played with or against for the last 20 years was in that
queue. Pelé.
And everyone's come up there and I'm going, Ronnie, what are you, how did you do this? Trust you, Ronnie. Honestly, anyone would think that I connived to get that position.
I wouldn't have said anything.
Very, very hurtful. And I actually met him. He was in Melbourne, I think, 2014 or so, doing a bit of a talk. And he was doing it with some of your colleagues from SBS.
Was it Les or
Craig? Yeah, Les was there. Les was there. And they were doing that. And during the halftime break, I'd taken a photo with Pelé the first time. And I've gone up to the green room door, and there was these huge, massive security fellows. Said, boy, what do you want? I showed him the photo and said, oh, look, you know, I wonder, would you take this in and see if Pelé would sign it? And they go, oh, wait there.
That's good.
And they've gone rumbling in. They come back and say, come with me. And I've gone, yeah, whatever you say. So I've gone in. Pelé was sitting down there, and he said, oh, you're a policeman. I said, yeah, because obviously in police uniform in the photo. And so he signed it, and he said, I'm sorry, I don't remember this photograph being taken. And I said, look, I don't expect you to remember a photograph with me all those years ago, but you might remember that a lady tried to give you a St. Christopher medal, and you gave it back to her, and you could just see the light going on in his eyes.
Yeah.
And he said, I remember that lovely lady, and I gave her back the medal and gave her a kiss. And, for him to remember that, I thought, was another indication of what sort of person he was. And he actually, he said, oh, do you want another photo? And I looked at it, and I looked at the photo that he'd signed, and I said, you know what? No, I've got this photo. I've got this fantastic memory, and that's enough. And he laughed, and he laughed, and he laughed, and he says, oh, that's great. We'll stay young together. And so we have.
Well done.
Speaking of lovely ladies, there's a few that you might want to mention while we're live on air tonight.
Well, of course, there's. I've already spoken about Lauren and Courtney, my daughters, my football widow Gail, who sits at home and comes along to some of the games, but probably has to be dragged along, well, like so many spouses. So, not just there, to all the ladies who are so supportive of their partners and their their lovers throughout their careers. I say thank you. We really do appreciate it. We might not look like it when we bring those dirty kits and dirty boots on, but thank you.
Don't worry about the collective thank you. Yeah. Just give her a special thank you for you. How about that?
Thank you, sweetheart.
There you go. Speaking of memorable, people that we care about because they make an impact on our lives, some of our coaches, any that stand out we should acknowledge?
I've already spoken about Stacky, who was
a character and a half.
And still is a character and a half. Don't worry about that. He's actually coming with us to Vietnam.
What?
Next Thursday, we fly to Vietnam. We're taking an over-50s team, and we're playing some games with some of the locals over there. But, Stacky's pre-season killed people. He used to run a sweat box that went for about 3,000 kilometres. And would not, literally wouldn't stop training until somebody had thrown up. Mickey Sinclair was just a hard man and a hard coach. And he was as hard off the field as he was on it. He would destroy opponents with his verbal tirade. And I've spoken about Norrie Pate, who was a real player's coach, and had that sort of Billy Connolly comedic ability that, you know, he could tell a story, he could turn everything around, and was a very, very good footballer as well.
There's a great story. I'm not sure if you mentioned it earlier. It's to do with the under-20 Taiwanese international player who gave you guys a bit of a touch-up.
Look, we travelled to China and Taiwan in 2013. The Victoria
this is
Police,
part of responsibilities there, yeah. Representing the police force. Yes.
Representing Victoria Police. I mean, yeah, we do it in our own time and at our own expense, but
and
it's
what
a
happened,
great way
what
to
happened
see
here?
Stuff. And we'd sent them over a thing to say, look, you know, we're a community-based team. We
sure.
just want to do something
yeah.
and just play some local coppers and do this, that, and the other. Yeah, no worries. We've gone over there and we ended up playing the Taiwanese national under-20s team. In the
up.
National Stadium.
A
it was an
up.
Absolute stitch-up and a half. And I'm marking this kid who would have given Usain Bolt the time of his life.
Wow.
He was running around the place and he wouldn't stop. And I spoke about halftime antics. It was about 47 degrees in the shade and there was no shade. And this kid at halftime, while I'm lying on the ground with ice packs on me, this kid is doing doggies to stay warm. And I've gone up to him just after half time and said, mate, he had really good English. And I said, mate, I can't chase you anymore. I'm absolutely shattered. So here's the deal. If you run more than 10 metres, if I have to chase you more than 10 metres, at the end of that, I'm going to kick you up in the air. And he had a bit of a laugh. And then the ball's come over. He's run 20 metres. Yeah, he's run 20 metres to get the ball. I've chased him for 20 metres and kicked him up in the air. And he's looked up and he said, oh, it's, I thought you were joking. I said, no, I'm not joking. So he was really good for the next about 30 minutes, just a little short, sharp, a little short, sharp. So I'm getting in the same postcode as him. But then towards the end of the game, he's gone off again, another 20, 25-yard run. And I've kicked him up in the air when I caught him, and he's looked up from the ground as I've helped him up, and he says, oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot.
Short concentration speed.
Yeah, it was so young.
But it sounds like you guys have had a fabulous time travelling the world and representing Victoria and the police force.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And you've travelled everywhere. I've had a look at some of the details and your itinerary, and you've gone from one end of the world to the other. China, as you alluded to, a couple of times, two or three times there. Washington, D.C., thank you very much. Southeast Asia, on and on. Paris, tell me about Paris and your time there. The homeless,
at the Homeless World Cup, which is just another fantastic organisation that brings people out of homelessness through their work in football. And you touched on travel all around the world. We're so lucky that our chosen sport is the world game. I would rather kids play any sport than watch football on TV, because that gets them out playing. I don't care what they play. If they're playing a sport, that's fantastic. But our particular sport is the world game, and you know, you can go anywhere in the world and there's football.
That's fantastic stuff. But Paris, did you win or lose in Paris?
I refereed, so I won.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you
when you referee,
won every game. Perfect.
Always, yeah. The last word, the final say. Speaking of the last word and the final say, we're getting close.
He's got
to
the whistle. Remember that
time of the week where we start to wind up. The last couple of years, personally, have been a bit tough for you. There's been a little bit of in and out health wise with the hospitals.
Yep.
Just run us through where you, what happened, what you've been through for the last couple of years, and where you're currently at. Give us some good news at the end of it.
Yeah, well, it is good news. I've been treated for multiple melanoma. And that has that's come and gone. Had an initial operation that was successful, but as with melanoma, as melanoma does, it's an insidious thing, and back it came. So I've had five operations for it. Cut various bits out, and you just run around with the bits that are left.
Do you cover up now just about everything?
No, I've never been that sort of person. If I can show something, I do. It's a good thing we're on
show
radio.
Show them a yellow card. Yeah, show them a red card.
A red card, you know.
Scotsman sees a bit of sun.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, when they did this, and you know, the lesson is slip, slop, slap, and correct. I really, really say that nowadays.
Mean it.
The oncologist said, look, that damage was probably done 40 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. The cover over Australia about 40 years ago was probably not as good as it has, developed over the last few years. I think the conditions have improved because we're using less of this spray stuff. That helps immeasurably.
Yeah,
but 40 years ago, not so much.
Yeah, it comes down to that personal thing. You know, I say it to everyone: slip, slop, slap, cover up, cover up, cover up.
I wonder if Katsanis will ever. Yeah, heed any of your advice.
Well, I hope so.
He's a thrill seeker and a pirate.
I always listen to my elders. So, just to clarify that Facebook post, you were born in 1960. 1963 was my era, which was clearly never going to be correct.
No, that's 63 is when we arrived in Australia on my birthday.
That's right. Do you remember the name of the vessel?
Yeah, the SS Strathaiden.
Yeah, yeah. Ron Sinclair, you refereed the Deaf Olympics in 2005, and that includes the final at Olympic Park. How do you referee a game for the hearing impaired? Thank you very much.
The Deaf Olympics, it was fantastic. And again, so you know, here's football.
Do you run past them
people.
And just wave in front of their eyes?
No, you get given a flag. You get as a referee.
But if they're running away from you.
I know, and there's the challenge. So one of the games was out at Bentley Greens. One of the preliminary games was out
Kingston
at Bentley
Heath.
Greens. And there's his player, and he was sort of doing little circles around the place and had committed a foul. So I'm chasing him around with this, if that's for me, just tell him I'll be finished
it's
in 5 minutes.
It's my daughter. As she gets a bit inquisitive at this time of the evening, you know,
right.
And she thinks, I can reach out to Dad.
Yeah. So I'm chasing this player around in circles, waving the flag, but because he was going in circles, I just couldn't catch his eye, and the people on the sidelines were killing themselves laughing.
So how long did this go on for?
Oh, well, it felt to me like it went on for as long as this interview, but it was probably only about 15 seconds.
Ron, how do you distinguish between the referee with the flag and the linesman?
Well, in this case, the referee was a lot better looking than anyone else.
And do you have a different coloured flag?
No, it was a little one. It wasn't a proper one. It was a little triangular flag.
Dearing.
But because you're a referee here, if you got close enough, you could just whack them with it. So that worked as well.
Amazing stuff. Yeah. I'm sitting there thinking, Deaf Olympics.
Deaf Olympics, yeah, that's it.
That's fantastic. Well, we're seeing them do so many fabulous things. They play golf, they play tennis, why not play football? And I'm thinking, how do you referee?
Yeah. Well, badly. I referee badly.
With a flag.
All right, so you're off to Vietnam, is that right, with the police team?
Next Thursday.
Okay, and then after that you're off for another trip straight from Vietnam to?
To China. I'm going off and refereeing in
this is the one at Chengdu, 15. Is it?
No, that's in August. The World Police and Fire Games are in
please.
August. At the same time as the Gothia Cup, which I've refereed at a number of times, a great, fantastic youth tournament. But, it's an international under-15s tournament, so there'll be the Chinese international under-15s team, some provincial teams from around China, and teams from Singapore, Vietnam. So
The Gothia Cup you've done two or three times.
Three times, so yeah, fantastic. Unfortunately, this year, it is the same time, exactly the same week as the World Police and Fire Games, so I'll miss the Gothia Cup 2019, but I'll be there in 2020.
Well, listen, we're available. We haven't been to China before.
You should It'll give
take two of us to do
give Dad's
one
whistle
job.
A bit of a toot and see how you go.
All those listening, and all you've done is travel your whole life, really, with football. From Scotland. I just want you to clarify that as a policeman, you're going off in your own time. And it's not part of work as such. It's on your own leave, taking your
own leave. Wouldn't it be a fantastic thing? Like Chief Commissioner Graham Ashton may be listening.
Yes.
I think one of the things that you could do to improve Victoria Police is to have a full-time football team.
Correct.
Wow. And a coach. And we'd put our hand up.
And two commentators.
And two commentators to come along.
Yes. Yeah? We could be part of the social media unit.
All right, let's put together a bit of a business case.
Graham Ashton.
Put it into Graham Ashton, if you're listening, Bob.
Yeah. You know how it works. They say radio is an amazing thing. Everyone's listening all the time. They don't always hear unless you impress your point to their immediate subconscious. And when you mentioned Commander Ashton.
Chief Commissioner.
I bet you his ears went, they're talking about me again.
Well, there may be that. We may get a professional football team, or I may get the sack tomorrow.
I may get the DCM.
Way, Jose. Either way, we'll make an impact.
That's right. Yeah. I expect you to mention it on the radio.
We certainly will.
Ron Sinclair, it's been an absolute hoot. I didn't realise we'd have so much fun. And we haven't blown the whistle yet. Go, George.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show and shedding some light on what the Victorian Police soccer team do and the great work they do on the charity front. Thank you for sharing your story with us. We appreciate it. The playing, the refereeing, the leaving grounds in tanks. We've never had a pioneer
armoured personnel carrier. Thank you.
Tank.
No. I did call it a tank. Sure. Never let the truth get in the way of the good story. I've often said that through my police career.
The boys from the Preston Knights are coming. So the Preston the Lions Den is about. Lions. To unleash itself on us, so we have to fly. So, Ron Sinclair, thank you so much for joining us.
I might see you at the Community and Business on the 3rd of May. We'll be there. We'll be talking. It's only 2 days before Tony's big day, so we'll be talking about it there.
Excellent.